What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Matt Report Season 8, this time with my good friend, Paul Jarvis, who happened to write and author a new book called Company of One. So I had him on the show to talk about that and sort of explore that whole process, what it's like to sort of come up with this idea, shop the idea, get somebody to take you on board and publish a book with. How do you get it to market? We talked about how some of like his marketing efforts are even better than, you know, some of these bigger branded publishers that are out there. And that was a great sort of insight to see that a lot of the stuff that we all do as marketers and like these grassroots movements of getting people onto an email list, doing a course, doing some videos, like all of that stuff is still really helpful. And even at the higher echelons of what we would perceive to be just higher end marketing and publisher folks, they're not doing that stuff. And Paul talks about how he's taken it onto some of his own accord to get that stuff. Paul also does a ton of things on the software side. He's got GetFathom, which is analytics and open source analytics platform that is like a more simplified version of Google Analytics. It talks about how he opens up the data so that you know you're not being tracked like a Google Analytics. So we get into all the nitty gritty of that. We talk about his courses plugin that he has for WordPress. So his podcast, a whole wealth of things. I really hope you enjoy this episode. As we move along, I think I might stop talking about WordPress so much, right? There's a ton of WordPress podcasts out there. I still have a bunch of YouTube videos that I'll do on WordPress, but I don't think the Matt Report moving forward is going to be pure WordPress. I don't know. What do you think? Tweet at me, at Matt Medeiros. Let me know what you think about just, you know, moving on and broadening our horizons here to just covering more things digital. People who are doing things in the digital space, not just WordPress. That's where I feel like I really want to go into 2019 and beyond. Don't forget to subscribe at mattreport.com/subscribe. Number one way to stay connected. Let's get into the episode.
Yeah, so I've worked for myself for 20 years. I started making websites, I guess, in the 90s. And then people started paying me, like professional athletes, Microsoft, Mercedes-Benz, Warner Music. And then I transitioned into making websites for online entrepreneurs like Marie Forleo, Danielle Laporte, Chris Carr. And I now basically do products. I moved away from client work on WordPress to making products, and all my products run on WordPress sites for the marketing side. So I do things like courses, books, and software products now.
I'd imagine that writing a book, publishing a book, getting all that over the overhead of creating a book took some time. How long did it take to do this?
Yeah, so it actually took a lot longer because I went their traditional publishing route. So working with two publishers, one in the US, one in the UK, definitely took a longer time than I'm used to. Because I've published, I think, 5 self-published books, and then this one's traditionally published. I think I went 2 years from writing the book proposal with my agent to it being out. Because I think her and I started the proposal in January 2017, and the book came out January 15th, 2019. So, yeah, it's about 2 years, which seemed like a long time. But then as it was like December of 2018, I was like, oh, no, there's not enough time. Oh, no.
I was that guy in school where, you know, hey, projects due in 6 months. No worries. No worries. I've got plenty of time.
Oh, no.
And then it was like day 75, and I'm like, I guess I should start this thing. I asked the question because I'm sure this is a heavy undertaking, and I want to talk about it deeper as we move on, but a lot has changed in WordPress over this time. Have you been able to keep up while doing a book and keep up with, like, everything else? You know, you go 2 weeks, and all of a sudden there's a new, you know, like, JS framework, and you have to kind of learn it all. Have you been able to keep up with everything while doing all of this?
No, and your audience will hate me, but I haven't even looked at Gutenberg yet. Like, it's on my, like, it is literally on my list, especially for the plugin that I sell. I need to, like, we need to make blocks for it. Haven't yet. I just haven't had, like, I need to, basically the way my business works is I do, it's just me and I guess for the WordPress plugin partner, but it's it's mostly just me and partners or freelancers that I work with. So it's a ridiculously tiny business. And I only do like one thing at a time. So the WordPress plugin is coming back up to like the thing that I focus on for a couple weeks. But we're not at that point yet. So I haven't been able to keep up. And I've wanted to, and I just have like, dude, I've probably done about 130, 140 interviews in the last couple months. It's just
Jesus.
My life has been very overwhelmed with the book launch, but that'll pass. Mm-hmm. And then I can get back to other things. I need to work on another version of my analytics software as well, which also needs some work. And I have to update the WordPress plugin for it. You're adding to my to-do list today, Matt, and I hate you.
Yes, you're going to walk away from this maybe quite saddened or stressful before you begin. And I'm actually also interested to learn more about the software product. But, you know, and let me just sidebar here. Most of my audience will actually be relieved you haven't touched Gutenberg yet, because a lot of folks haven't really taken too well to the concept, to the idea. Obviously a lot changed with the editing experience. It presumably made a boatload more work for folks who didn't necessarily want to learn more things around the holiday season. It sounds like the dust is settling a bit on that front. I'm just curious to know if how do you reintegrate yourself into the WordPress world? Like, is there something, obviously we've heard some of these tasks are a little bit overwhelming, but is there something out there that you're still scratching your head about? Like, boy, where am I even going to begin to dive back into the WordPress pool at this point?
Yeah, I think for me, this just seems to be the trend. I mean, this is like old man internet shaking his fist at everything. Mm-hmm. But like, I remember, I love starting sentences like this. I remember in the good old days of web development, when it was like front end was HTML, CSS, maybe like a smattering of JavaScript, like pre jQuery even. So a smattering of that. And then back end was like PHP, CGI, like a couple that, like, it wasn't very many things. And now it's like, oh, I gotta like compile my CSS, and I've gotta have like pre-process. Like, there's just all of this stuff. Like, it feels like development has gotten so much more complicated. Even WordPress, like making blocks. Like, I've only quickly looked at it, so don't know what I'm talking about. But like, I've been theming and doing plugin stuff for a long time, just like PHP. Like, I can basically write a theme from scratch, and then I just Google like, oh, I need, what's that function? I just look it up, and now it seems like it's a lot more complicated. Yeah. But I also feel like it's kind of good. Like, I don't know if it's entirely good because I haven't done it yet, but I just look at all of these like page layout builders, and because I sell a plugin that a lot of people buy that use page layout builders, and I won't name any by name, but a lot of them are really not good or not well coded or affect metadata in my plugin, and it's not their plugin, it's my plugin. So I have to support page builders and layout builders that people aren't paying me for. And so I just feel like if there's going to be like a path forward, that seems smart. That seems like it'll reduce the amount of support I'll have to do for a plugin that I sell that has nothing to do with page layouts. Like, it's literally just adding buttons to courses so students can mark lessons as complete or not in a WordPress course. So that has nothing to do with building a page layout, but all of these plugins, and there's so many of them, and I basically have to know how all of them work. And it's like, oh, if Gutenberg can just like take care of this and reduce the level of support I have to do, I will actually be happy. I know I have to learn it still, but like, I will be happy if that's the case.
Yeah. I think that is something that WordPress itself is, it sorely needs to compete against, you know, the alternatives out there. And even the word I've been highlighting for years now is experience. And mm-hmm. It's the experience of a user experiencing WordPress. And it's either through your product, right? Maybe somebody stumbles across your plugin, like, wow, like, this is great. I've found the icing on the cake here. I'm definitely going to invest in this WordPress thing. This buttons everything up for me. And then, oh, by the way, this page builder says I can do whatever I want with it. So this sounds great too. And then they make the smattering of technologies together. And the experience isn't fun, and they don't maybe tend to blame you or the page builder. They just blame WordPress, and they say, boy, WordPress is difficult. You know,
yeah.
This experience of WordPress was very difficult for me. I didn't know where to look. There was nobody to really help me besides going to one vendor to the next. And I really truly believe that Gutenberg will at least take the first step to bridge that massive ravine that users have to cross. But I think what a lot of people are missing, or maybe not nowadays, but to create this great experience that WordPress needs, I think we all might need to start losing a little bit of control over what we as product makers can introduce into WordPress. You know, think Android versus Apple, you know, that kind of thing. The experience of Android is, or I should say the footprint of Android is very vast. Lots of phones, lots of manufacturers, but the experience is very different across them. And then you have Apple. It's just Apple. It's just Apple hardware. And the experience is purely Apple, which is great. You pay a premium price. And I think some of these decisions, maybe you've been too far away from WordPress to kind of see this stuff happening over the last couple of years. I think that it's smart for WordPress to head in that direction. I'm just sort of worried that, hey, as you and I, small product owners in the WordPress space, we might start to see some different mandates coming down saying, hey, guess what? Things are going to be done a little bit differently around here. I don't know, but I think it's going to be something that really helps the project move forward in the long run. Agree, disagree?
I think it comes down to like the who they're going after. And I mean, if this makes it easier for the users, but a bit more work for developers or product owners, that's maybe not the worst thing. Like I'm like old man internet again, but like I remember when CMSs came about.
Man, you're old.
So dumb. Oh man. But like I remember when it went from just like building static page by page, maybe with like a header.php and a footer.php. But like I remember when it went from building websites for clients that were static to like CMSs, and so many internet professionals were like, I'm going to be out of a job. I'm like, why? Like, no, you're not. Like, that's not how it works. I think that if we, the people that we're making the money off of are the end users, and we want the experience to be good. And if, like you were saying, like if they have to install like one less plugin to get the ability to be able to make things look the way they want it, like we have to go so far on our plugin site to say like our plugin isn't supported with the following layout builders, because they ruin our plugin, we can't support it. And I hate having to say like it doesn't work with this and it doesn't work with that, when I would rather, like, I wish it would, and I wish I could support that. And if it was just like, if you have an online course and it's in WordPress and you can use our plugin, I wish it was that easy. And I hope that it moves towards that for sure.
Publishing company of, well, actually no, before let me just take one step back before we talk about some of the pieces I enjoyed about this book. Talk to me about the stats project that you have, or company product that you have. Where the heck is it? How has it been? And how do you plan to approach it or tackle it in 2019? If you could sum that up in 30 seconds, that'd be amazing. Yeah.
Exactly. So the product is called Fathom Analytics. Yep. And the basic premise is that there's two problems with Google Analytics. The first is it's too complicated, and Fathom is a single screen. It's a single dashboard. It gives you far less data, but just as useful data. And the second issue is that Google is an advertising company where we are the product, because we don't pay for their product. And so every time, I think Google Analytics is installed on like 20-25% of websites online, or they have 20-25% of websites online have some kind of Google script on their site, meaning that Google can see not only what your site is doing, but what the people who go to your site are doing,
right,
which is scary. So Fathom...
Do you know who number two is?
No, because number two is probably so tiny.
Well, let me tell you, it's Jetpack. So it's our friends at Automattic collecting stats, but go ahead, continue.
So the second issue, that's really interesting. I didn't know that. The second issue is that we want to give, we don't feel like analytics requires giving up personal information. So the way that Fathom works is it's aggregate data. So we don't show you any information about any individual person who comes to the site or does things. We just say, like, these are the top pages, these are the top refers, this is the bounce rate, without collecting any IP address, country, location, demographic information. So it's all like GDPR, e-privacy, e-cookie compliant. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like a nicer way to do stats. Actually, does Jetpack collect any personal data?
You're going to learn a lot today, because there was a recent release on all of the stats, or excuse me, all of the data points, or at least I'd imagine what they've, you know, what they've made visible to us. I'll try to dig up the link and send it to you after the show. But they're doing some questionable things, like replicating your entire site, or at least the content and the structure of it, on their own servers, even after you remove the product. Apparently, clones of your site are still lingering around the Jetpack archives. So kind of interesting stuff.
That is. It kind of reminds me of how AMP works, where AMP pages rank higher in Google, but the content is served from Google, not you. So it's like, what are we willing to trade?
Right.
And so, yeah, Fathom, just the quick roadmap is, we launched it as a free product, so it's on GitHub. It did really well. Like, it was number two on Product Hunt, number two on Hacker News for a long time. People really liked it. And then we launched a paid version, and the paid version, it kind of works like WordPress, where if you want the free version, it's open source. You just grab it, install it, set it up yourself. If you want the paid version, you pay a tiny bit of money. We host it and maintain it for you.
And I would imagine, out of all of the things that you do, like, do you look at this one as like, this is the end game? I don't really like to use that phrase for you in particular, but in terms of like a product, a piece of software, like this, to me, it sounds like the big tuna in the room. Like, this thing could be pretty big and pretty powerful, and you know, not only grow really well and earn lots of money, but also take a lot of time and energy to run something like this as it scales.
Yeah, it's funny. So you mentioned time. So the WordPress plugin that I sell, WP Complete, that has probably 20 to 30 support requests a week, and it does low four figures a month in terms of revenue. Fathom does just slightly less revenue, but it has maybe one or two support requests a month, and half of those are just feature asks. So it requires almost no support, which is great, because it doesn't do anything. Like, it literally gives you a few stats, which I think are important stats. You install the code on your site, or you install a WordPress plugin and just put in the, like, your user code, and then it adds the code to your footer automatically. And we don't really want, our plan isn't to add a ton of features to it. Like, our plan is to keep it simple. And like, it's simple now. It only tracks a few things. We're adding events and users. And I can't think of what else we'd be adding this year. So it's going to be very small in terms of a feature set. And the growth of it has been decent, but entirely organic. And we're actually pretty happy with where it's at. So, yeah, I mean, it could turn out to be something huge, but it's not like, if it does scale in that way, it also shouldn't, I would assume, scale a ton in terms of like, oh, we need to hire like 8 more people.
Right.
It'd be like, eh, if we brought on like another 1,000 users, we may need like a part-time support person.
Yeah. Because most of these people that are using this, one would imagine are more technical in the first place, right? It's not like they've stumbled upon this.
Well, no, the technical people would have installed the code themselves from GitHub. So these people, but they do have, like, they do care about privacy. And I found that the people who care about privacy do have a higher level of technical understanding, because they understand the importance of privacy online. So yeah, I think you're right. In that regard, they do have a bit more, but they're like, a lot of the people that pay for Fathom aren't programmers, because if they were, they would just like spin up a like DigitalOcean instance with Fathom running on it and set up Nginx and be off to the races.
Got it. That makes sense. let's transition to the book, because a lot of this stuff is is your mantra, right? The reason why maybe you don't look as Fathom. I think some people look at Fathom, they go, okay, well, when are you getting that first seed round, or how much did you get from your angel, and when are you going to go for that first Series A and look for investors? I think many people look at that from the outside and as a natural next step. I know a lot of folks that I've talked to in the past look at that, and I guess that's okay for them, not okay for you, or just not the route you want to go for this type of product.
Yeah, somebody's already offered us a substantial amount.
I'd imagine. I would imagine.
I talked to my co-founder, and I was like, well, that's kind of cool. And he's like, yeah, of course it's cool. I'm like, what would we do with the money? And he was like, do you know? And I'm like, no, like what would change? And we're like, we might be able to put a bit more of each of our time towards it, but we don't really need to, because it going slowly makes it easier to do things properly. So it's like, it wouldn't make any difference. So why would we give up some control of our company just for a bit of money that we don't need?
Yeah, right.
Which is kind of the thesis of the book.
Right, right. Why, Paul? why write a book amongst all of the stuff you have in front of you? Why did you do it? Why did you say yes? Did somebody convince you? Did you lose a game of horse on the basketball court? Why did you decide to go into this heavy investment? I would imagine both mentally and physically to get a book out amongst all of the other things that you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I lose every game of horse I play. but I just, so for the longest time, like I've always kind of had this idea that I don't want to grow my business even when it's successful. And I think a lot of people assume that business success equals business growth. And I've never thought that. And I was always like, I'm just a weirdo who thinks this way. Like I'm just some weird Canadian living in the woods on an island who really cares about like digital privacy. But then I wrote about it, and I've had a weekly newsletter for the last 6 years where I just share an article I write every Sunday. And so I wrote about it. I think the article was called, and this was like 2.5 years ago. And I wrote an article, and I think I called it something like Why I Don't Care About Growth. And I was just like, I'm just going to explain my weird take on business. People aren't going to get it, but I just feel like this is something I feel like I just need to share to get it off my chest and be done with it. And I usually get 150, 200 replies to my Sunday dispatch emails. That one, I think I got like 1,200, 1,300 replies to it. And it was people saying like, I thought I was the only one who didn't want to grow like my business into a massive company. Or I thought I was the only one who wanted to grow my business to the right size and then optimize for that size. And I was like, wow, there's like a lot of people who feel this way. And then I was like, I'm just gonna go look for a book that talks about this, and then I can just like tell people to go read that. And there wasn't one. And I was like, oh no, I guess I'm writing that book.
Right.
And that's really what it came from. And was like, well, why isn't anybody talking about this? And then that little voice is like, hey, if nobody's talking about this, you should talk about this. And I was like, really? To that voice? And it was like, really?
And so how does one, and did you have connections in, you know, I'm just sort of fascinated how one gets, you know, paper printed these days for this kind of thing. Do you have to shop the idea? Do you know somebody who says, you know, hey, let's look at the idea and do like a thesis paper before they say yes to taking you on board? What does that look like for those who might be interested in publishing their own book?
Sure. So if you self-publish, just do it. Like it's as easy as that. It's easy to use CreateSpace if you want to print books on demand through Amazon. You don't have to carry inventory. KDP is great for publishing Kindle books on Amazon. You do not need any gatekeeper or anybody to say okay to your idea to do those things. I've done those things 5 times. I've made decent money and sold a lot of, I think I've sold like 70,000 books self-publishing.
Nice.
Like you can do it. It's easy to do it. If you want to write a book and publish a book that way, just do it. Easy. If you want to go the traditional route, which is what I did for this book, and I don't even think it's the right route. It was just the route that I wanted to try this time. First you need to find an agent, a literary agent, and they're you basically have to pitch yourself and your idea and your audience size to them first, because really they're only going to say yes to an author that they think they can sell the idea to a publisher. And the publisher is only going to say yes to an author via an agent if they think they can make money off of that author. So a lot of it comes down to, I have a pretty substantial size mailing list that I talk to regularly every Sunday for 6 years. And I have, social media. I guess I have Twitter, and I'm not on Instagram or Facebook or LinkedIn, but I do have a okay following on Twitter as well. And I know a lot of other authors, and really, like, that's what it comes down to. It's like, who do you know and who do you reach? Because they don't want to sign people where it's like, oh, I don't know if it's a good idea. So once you find an agent, and they're like, yeah, let's work together, because they're like, yeah, I can make money off of this person. You write a book proposal, which is kind of like writing the book in short form without writing the book. Like you say, like, in this chapter, I will cover these studies, these interviews, these points. And then in the book proposal itself, you talk about, like, I reach this number of people on these platforms. This is my open rate. This is the breakdown of demographics. So it's almost like a business plan for a book that you have to write. And then your agent shops it to publishers. Luckily, in my case, two publishers were interested. So it could have, like, we could have turned it into a bidding war, like a real estate thing. Like, I watched Million Dollar Listing last night, so it's on my brain.
You could have had, like, somebody following you, like, you know, vlogging the whole thing, and you're taking the phone calls and raising the price.
Exactly. But one of the, so I talked to both of the editors at the publishers that wanted to work with me. They're both phenomenal people. One of them was Cal Newport's editor, and I'm the biggest Cal Newport fanboy. I think Deep Work and So Good are two of the best books. And I was like, well, if this guy is good enough for Cal, he's good enough for me. And so I was like, I told my agent, I'm like, they don't need to, like, resubmit bids to see who's going to be the highest one. I just want to work with this publisher because he seems awesome. And he's worked with Cal, and that's great. And that's good enough for me. So let's move forward.
Nice.
And then I think it took me about 3 or 4 months to write the book. But then there's, like, 3 or 4 months of press. I wrote, produced, and recorded a podcast for the book. I created a, like, online course for the book and community for the book running on Discourse. The course runs on WordPress, obviously, with my plugin.
But question about that. So I've always seen, you know, us internet folks here, where we're the ones that have been doing marketing for so long, and we look at the publishing industry, or any, I guess, quote unquote, traditional old school industry, we say, we know what we're doing. We're going to make that podcast. We're going to make a YouTube series to supplement this. We're going to do a course. Did you have all of those ideas and you brought it to them, or are they up to speed these days of good marketing mechanics to inform you to do that kind of thing?
No, they are not.
Okay.
So their area of expertise is things like, oh, well, you want to write, like, an op-ed piece for the New York Times, and they probably have connections there. Or, like, oh, we got your book reviewed in these publications that every book reviewer for magazines reads, so we'll get you in there. Or we can get, like, my book is sold at Target and Walmart. I don't know how that even happens, but because I have a publisher who has distribution, like, I get pictures from people who see my book in bookstores all over the world, and, like, I don't know how that happened,
right,
but my publisher does, because they have distribution channels, and that's cool. I don't have any, like, people contacted me and are like, oh, I haven't got my book yet. I'm like, oh, I, what? Okay. I'm so many steps removed from that. Like, if you ordered it from somewhere, then contact those people, because I have no say. Same with the price. It's like, I can't affect the price on Amazon.
Right.
Like, my publisher can't even. Amazon sets the prices for things, for books on Amazon, not even the publisher.
So when they hear you bring up these ideas, are they not even in those types of meetings? But I'm just curious how they react to somebody who's, like, doing all these extra, I guess I would call extra things to promote the book, stuff that I think is the smart way to do it.
Can I tell you a story that could get me in trouble?
Sure. This is what the Matt Report's all about.
Yes. So they're basically okay with doing things that sell books.
Yeah.
So I had a pre-order campaign on the book's website. And if they registered a copy of their, like, if they registered their pre-order, like, put in your name, where you bought it, what the order ID was from Amazon. And this is just, like, a form in WordPress that connects to MailChimp. And if they did that, they got a bunch of bonuses. One of the bonuses was the prologue in chapter one of the book, like 5 months before the book came out. I didn't ask my publisher for this. And technically, they own the rights for distribution of the content of the book. But I was like, I would rather just ask for forgiveness than permission. And because the pre-order campaign did so well, they were pleased that I did that. It would probably have been a different conversation if it hadn't have gone well and sold thousands of copies in the pre-sale. So I just feel like I do digital marketing for a living. I launch products for a living. Like, I make money making and launching things on the internet. So like, the publisher wouldn't know to put the book on Product Hunt, but I do. And I got it to number two on Product Hunt. For some reason, I never get to number one on Product Hunt or Hacker News. For Fathom, for Company of One, for anything. I'm always number two.
Right.
Sick fiddle. But yeah, like all of those things, like, it helps me as the author to do as much as possible so then I can earn up my advance and start making money on royalties.
Right, right.
Like that's what I want to do. This is a product. I want to make money off the product. I already pre-made money by getting an advance, but I want to earn that out and start making money off of the books as soon as possible because I got the advance years ago now.
Smack dab in the middle of the book, it's the first sentence of chapter six, and it says, in high school, I was a kid that everyone picked on. Day after day, I'd get made fun of, or someone would lure me into a fight. I figured my personality was the weakest part of who I was and attempted to hide it as much as I could. And of course, the chapter goes on to expand upon how it's actually your strength is your personality. That sentence just like really impacted me because, number one, like I was always the short, fat kid in high school. I wasn't necessarily picked on. I was sort of like somewhere in the middle kind of thing. I certainly wasn't going out and playing sports with any of my friends. I was unathletic at that time. And I didn't have the confidence, interestingly enough. And I grew up in the car sales business. My family owned a couple car dealerships. And, you know, right around that age where the male brain begins to mature and understand what's happening.
What age is that?
When I don't even know. It was like yesterday. I was thrown into car sales, right? And doing sales. I grew up in the business washing cars. Well, I grew up in the business cleaning the lot to washing cars, to delivering parts, to working in service. And then the consumer internet age came about and there was this thing called the internet. And they were like, hey, we need an internet manager. And I went to sales. And that really accelerated my thick skin, my confidence, my personality, that kind of thing. I think this is such like personality and people being afraid to do things and doubting themselves is like 90% of, you know, starting a business, you know, aside from the product, aside from legal and accounting. It's like you have to own who you are, why you're doing it.
Those are things that can't be replicated as easy.
Right.
Like
right.
Somebody could look at my WordPress plugin for courses and be like, I could code that.
Right. Right.
Easy. Like code that in a couple of days, done. But like replicating the connection that I have with my audience is very different. Or like how I did a survey a couple years ago with my mailing list. And I think it was statistically relevant. Like I got thousands of replies, which boggled my mind. And one of the questions I asked, it was just one of these like throw in questions that I just thought of off the top of my head and I typed it in a type form. One of the questions that I asked was, why did you buy from me? And like it was just something that like I just thought of and put it in and forgot about it till I got the answers. And I was looking at the answers and I'm like, this is probably the most important question I've ever asked.
Sure.
Because like when you think about it, it's like there's a gazillion like WordPress hosting companies. There's a gazillion business books. There's a gazillion like SaaS companies. Why do people buy from the specific, like why is somebody going to read my business book or my philosophy book about business? It's not really a business book. Like why is somebody going to read that as opposed to this other one or this other one or this one or this new one or this old one? And the number one answer that people said for like why they bought things from me, and the answer was like, because I was the one who created it. Because they'd gotten to know my personality and I'm a weird dude. And like they'd gotten to trust me through the way that I expressed my personality. So in the beginning in high school, I was like, this is the worst part about me. And then as I started to do like sales and marketing and putting myself out there on the internet, like it's not all rainbows and butterflies, but still it's like, it's the thing that draws people in. Like it's the thing that makes people be like, oh, I want to talk to Paul, or I want to buy Paul's course or Paul's software, as opposed to somebody else's. Like somebody else launched a privacy focused analytics platform on Product Hunt on the exact same day as Fathom came out. And luckily they're like a transparent company as well. So they post their MRR, and like our, and it's not even bragging, but ours is substantially higher. And I think the reason that both are great products, like the guy's a good programmer, both are very similar and they're both good products, but because I had an audience of people that I had built a relationship with and built trust with and shared my personality with, more of those people bought it than just like random looky-loos on Product Hunt or Hacker News.
So you get to the end of this run, you publish the book, you do 3,000 interviews, you appear on The Ellen Show.
I'm on The Ellen Show right now.
Oh, this is great. Well, say hi. At the end of the day, when the dust settles, when you take that deep breath, sit back and say, yeah, this was a success. What does that look like in your eyes, success of this book, in the once all of the calm comes into play?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like me sitting by a pool in Palm Springs, not working, to be honest. Like, that's what it, but like, really, man, like, I just, like, the reason I wrote the book is because I think that, and it's a shame that some people are put off from starting a business or making a product or doing something in business because they're like, well, business looks like this one thing, or like a business leader looks like this one type of person, or like if I'm going to start a business, I don't want to like have offices and employees, and so maybe I shouldn't, like maybe I just shouldn't start, maybe I shouldn't do this. And I think it's a shame if we're putting people off of entrepreneurialism before they even start, because we're giving them this like one track, this rapid growth, or like you got to be like a dominant A-type personality instead of some weird dude covered in tattoos who likes pet rats like me. Like, I want people to see that there are options in business. Like, I run my business like no other business, and tons of people do that. It might not get all of the press on like TechCrunch, but like, I still make a great living. I still have a comfortable life for myself and my family. And like, it's doable to do things the way that you want to do them. If it's your business, you should be able to make the decisions and the rules and set the boundaries. And I think that like, if people come away from like knowing that that's the case, then I'll be happy. I don't care if it's 5 people, 500 people, whatever, as long as it's enough people to just get me to Palm Springs in front of a pool. It doesn't even matter what size,
whatever that GoFundMe looks like.
Exactly. Yeah. So like if enough people read that and get that lesson from it, I'll be stoked. That's a success.
Book is called Company of One. It's written by our friend talking to us today, Paul Jarvis. It's got two different book covers in the US and in the UK. Am I correct?
Yeah, different publishers. They don't like each other's art.
Oh.
So they make new designs. I didn't even know this going in. Because I'm like, why is it? Because people keep, they're like, well, which book should I buy? I'm like, it's the same content.
Haven't you ever heard the phrase?
I didn't write two books.
did you have a hand at the artwork? Or is that something that they just bring on artists for it? You have to kind of take it.
I'd take it.
Okay.
That's basic. So as long as, but here's the thing, like the book cover isn't for me. I don't care if I like it or not.
Right.
I care if the right people pick it up and read it because of that. So if that's the case, I'm happy with the cover. If it's not the case, I told you so. The cover sucks.
Yeah.
It's one of those two things.
Well, I think both covers look great. You can find it, of course, at, well, is there a preferred location? You tell us, is there a preferred location folks should go to buy the book?
Of1.co has a list of all the places that you can get it. Well, a list of most of the places you can get it. Or if you like to support indie bookstores, go find it there. It should be there. And if not, they can get a copy of it for you quickly.
Paul, I wish you all of the success in the world. I hope you do end up, down on the beach overlooking your successes. Where can folks find you to say thanks?
My newsletter. PJRVS.com, Sunday Dispatches, or on Twitter, PJRVS. It's mostly sarcasm tweets. You've been warned. It's mostly sarcasm tweets to you.
I was just going to say, sometimes I just reply to those emails and I'm just like, it's like 7 a.m. I'm just waking up and I'm like, let me just throw him a curveball, see if he's awake. Sure enough, he is. Thanks everybody for listening to this episode. Thanks, Paul, for joining us. It's Matt Report.com, Matt Report.com/subscribe to join the mailing list. Number one way to stay connected. If you want to leave us a 5-star review in iTunes, that'd be great. I'm trying to beat out this guy called Paul Jarvis. He's also in iTunes. I'm trying to get more 5 stars than him. Let's see if we can make it happen. We'll see you in the next episode.